cleaning up this world. That's what I want to do. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox on KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you. And today we're going to be talking a bit about social justice. And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Yakadoos Bagels, Kauai Canvas, Al Pastor Tacos, Kauai Concerts, and Ocean Safety. So, thank you for listening.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Fresh, organic, hand-rolled, boiled bagels from Yakadoos Bagelry. Baked fresh Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Yakadoos Bagels are available at Small Town Coffee, Hoku Foods, and Papayas in Kapa'a. Also, Rainbow Joe's in Lihue. Orders can be made at Yakadoos Bagel at yahoo.com. That's Yakudus Bagel at yahoo.com. Thanks for supporting your local bagelry.
Kauai Canvas, professional gallery quality giclée canvas printing and digital image capture now available on Kauai. Managing print flow, stretching, and even crating. More information at 212-6971 or online at kauaicanvas.com. Kauai Canvas, stretch your imagination.
Al Pastor Tacos supports KKCR across the street from the craft fair in Kapa'a by the beach. Al Pastor Tacos serves fresh grilled local fish, steak, chicken, and pork tacos, and burritos in the Al Pastor style. Also a garden salad and choices for the kids. Open every day from 11 to 4. Takeout orders welcome. Al Pastor Tacos, authentic Mexican food. 652-6953.
The Kauai Concert Association and Berklee College of Music proudly presents the annual Berklee Kauai Scholarship Fundraiser Concert, Sunday, January 11th, 4 p.m. at the KCC Performing Arts Center. This year's concert features international vocal quartet Women of the World and visual artist and classical Indian dancer Rekha Menon. Also, music and dance workshops on Friday, January 9th from 3 to 5 p.m. All proceeds go to the Berklee Kauai Scholarship Fund. More information and tickets available at 245-SING or online at kauai-concert.org.
Mahalo for listening and supporting Kauai Community Radio. So, Kauai Soapbox today, we're going to have a number of guests. We're going to have an in-studio guest, Bob Yunke, who is an environmental lawyer, is going to be able to share some Mana'o ideas with us on how we keep moving forward. It seems like sometimes there's some hits that we take. We have had, at a national level, global level, local level, some different challenges that have come up. And Bob's in here. We'll get him mic'd up in a moment here. And so I want to correct something that was out that wasn't quite right. Kilauea Neighborhood Association meeting is tonight, 7 o'clock at the Kilauea Neighborhood Center. It has been said, and I repeated that the Department of Transportation was going to be there, but nope. I spoke with Ray McCormick, and he is going to be at a different roads meeting in Puhi at Chiefs Kamakahele at 6 p.m. today, so they're going to be talking about the repair of Puhi Road. There's a lot of good things going on the island this Saturday at 10 o'clock. The Lions Club is doing their golf game up here at the Prince Course. We'll hear a little bit about that just towards the end there, because our Jazz with John, who comes in afterwards, he is definitely a part of that organization. Bob, let me make sure you're mic'd up. Are you there?
I am here.
Okay, we've got to get your mouth right next to the mic when you're in there. And I'm expecting a call in from a Kauai friend who is off in the world. And I will introduce him when he comes in first. But as we're talking about social justice issues and environmental justice, they're very closely related.
Indeed.
And Bob, you have had decades of experience in solving challenges.
Yes.
He's nodding his head.
Which
doesn't show on the radio. So he's going to be helping us with some of the ideas on how that goes and analyzing some of stuff that's been happening here in the state. Each Kauai, Hawaii, and Maui all really had a lot of citizen activism, much of which has been shot down by the courts. So later in the program, we'll get to talking about some of that and just in general your experience in the world.
Sure.
Of what has, how we can stay excited and stay motivated. And January 21st, I'm going to be over there. That's the opening of the legislature, and people will be coming from all around the islands to be a part of that. Vandana Shiva from India will be coming also, and she's going to be there. We have Dr. Stephanie Seneff. She will be there also. She is a part-time Kauai resident like you are, Bob. So we're having a collection of scientists and people coming to be discussing, you know, what next, how to keep moving forward. But something that it does seem how things are is that there's a duality in our justice system and a duality in the laws. If you have money and power, you get an injunction as soon as you do a lawsuit, you know, or people come up with a plan, and it if it's the small people, well, you know, that it seems like we're always swimming up against the current, you know. And I know you've worked for many years, so you've probably learned to be patient.
Well, yes, I've been at this for 43 years. Patience is an essential element of accomplishing anything on this planet, I think.
Yes, and we have Hapa Hendricks is on the phone with us, too. Hapa, are you there?
I am. Hi, Felicia.
Hi, and I don't know if you got to meet Bob Yonke. Eric Cannon and Marshall are in the house, too, just so everybody knows who all these voices are in the background. Hapa, I met you when you were running for mayor here.
Yes.
And I would just have to give a little bit of an introduction here. I hope you're fine with it. When I first met you, you were one of those people who was kind of almost like crazy intelligent, knowing so much stuff it's hard to even keep up with you. And I actually took some notes, and as you know, I unhooked the battery from my phone because I'm going, oh my gosh, you know a lot. But I wrote notes down, and then I went home and Google searched some of those things. A lot of it was beyond my foundation of knowledge at the time, and I checked into some of that, and then I have seen a lot of the pictures that have validated your worldwide experience. And so knowing some of these very intense experiences that you have had in global politics, that's almost hard to believe, I want to say, when you have been at the political forums and speaking on it, you have almost been the jester, you know, and you just kind of throw some things out there and everybody laughs, but it's tragedy, and I actually knew that you weren't joking and there was a lot of truth behind it. And I think many people kind of shifted in their seats hearing some of what you had to say, but in the end they laughed.
I always make it a goal to try to make other people feel uncomfortable. It's quite fun.
That was my experience of Hapa. I heard him during the candidates' debate. It wasn't exactly a debate.
Forum. We get asked a few questions and get to answer.
I didn't even know he was running for mayor until he was introduced at the forum, and he was the one who made the most sense to me.
Well,
thank you.
If you really sit and talk to him, it's unnerving how the depth of knowledge that you have. So I am giving that background so when people are listening, I'm giving you some credibility there. So if if you could make sure and speak really directly into the phone, but then give the listener.
Can you hear me well?
It sounds a little muffled. So if you could give the listener a little bit of your background, like being born here, you don't have to go deep, but the different types of things that brought you around the world. And then you can slice into some of these pieces on social justice. You just have to take a little piece of it because, you know, you could write a book. Or you probably have.
That's great. I was blessed to have several jobs in this lifetime that I'm incredibly proud of. My first was 3 months after my 17th birthday. I was basically hired by Senator Daniel Inouye's surveillance arm called NSCARE, which is I became a clandestine intelligence operative.
You break down that? Can you say what NSCARE stands for? What's the acronym?
Sure. It's an acronym that stands for National Security Threat Assessment Risk Evaluations. It was a program created by the DCI of the CIA at the time. His name was Joe Casey. Other people called him Bill Casey. I knew him as Joe Casey, who was my handler. The primary goal of that entire program was to infiltrate the CIA's Operation Pegasus, which was the global heroin and cocaine distribution network controlled by a portion of the Central Intelligence Agency. So there was a 12-man operation. Some literally infiltrated the executive branch of the government. Some infiltrated the CIA. Some infiltrated the DEA and others local LEOs. I was also a nuclear biological chemical warfare expert in Germany and Iraq for the 533rd MI Battalion with a top secret security clearance, and I had that at the age of 17 years old. But my favorite and most exciting and pertinent job to Kauai and its people there was I was a server at Duke's Canoe Club. Which I'd like to take a moment to say hello and a happy birthday to an exceptional culinary artist and manager at one of the sister restaurants of Duke's called Kioki's. His name is Corey DeTorio, which I had an amazing time with him, and it was a privilege to work with him.
Right on. So happy birthday, Corey.
All right. Cool. When I got back to, and I know we're talking about the environment on Kauai today, when I got back to Kauai, and I had been gone for 30 years. So when I got back, all the things that were happening were so atrocious to me that I literally had to speak out. Because what I saw as literally chemical, biological warfare being perpetrated on the people of Kauai under the guise of, you know, GMOs and geoengineering, aerosol dispersants in the troposphere that literally fall into the river waters and our soils that the cows eat, that are part of our water table. I was in shock, and I was so angry for a while that I knew that I had to do something about it. So one of the first things I did was I did a documentary on of 2013, from January 2nd to January 31st, I drank one cup of water, one cup of river water from Kauai each day, and that was it for 30 days.
From which river?
What would happen?
Which river?
The Hopi Falls.
And where is that?
Hopi Falls is right behind my house in Kapa'a.
Up in Kapa'a, okay.
Yeah, up near, it's in Kapahi.
Okay.
And what happened was, I kind of knew what would happen because I tested all the waters, and there was no way I was going to drink the water on the west side. It was that contaminated. And I was shocked to know that, you know, we have our own water testing facilities there. And the way I had my water testing done was about 12 years ago, I got into the water business. I really was fascinated by water. Me and a guy named Brandon Ross, who was the CEO of a Merivale Construction in New York City, very powerful man in business. I had created a scalar energy template that I could actually scalar infuse water. I built the scalar energy chamber with another guy named Al Bielek, who is of Philadelphia Experiment / Montauk Project fame. At the end of his life, he was actually discredited and lived in abject destitution and poverty, but I knew that his theoretical engineering skills and his physics skills were just off the chart, because he really did have a Rhyolite 38 clearance, and he knew everything about things that I don't even want to get into right now, off-planet technology, stuff like that. So anyway, I was working on, at the time, nothing to do with water, but I was working on actually brainwave states, because my wife was epileptic, and I believed that scalar energy would actually stop the acceleration of beta to theta states in the mind. So I built the scalar energy chamber with Al Bielek, got to get some scalar plates from it, but the actual epilepsy experiment went horribly awry, because the first time I got my wife into the scalar energy chamber, she had an 8-hour grand mal seizure, and I literally had to take her to the hospital in Fort Lauderdale, because if you ever seen somebody have a seizure for a few minutes, it's terrifying. If you watch the woman that you love have a seizure for 8 hours and it's because of something that you did, it's beyond terrifying.
So anyway,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, we are having issues over here with more and more seizures and some challenges, and even, one of the people in the studio here has...
Yeah, I've been having seizures for the past about 3 years now, and I have an 8-minute grand mal seizures. That's scary.
Well, he said 8 hours.
Eight hours.
And there's, one of the things that we'll be looking at, over the next couple of months, but where I've been seeing, and I think I sent you a post on that, is very low frequency radiation that is being emitted here, to be looking at mapping at the bottom of the ocean.
I was going to touch up on RIMPAC just for a moment. The EMFs that are... There's something that I don't understand why is not in the mainstream media. I think they're actually blocking this, but there's something called cryptochromes in the body, right? These are molecules within our body that absorb light to generate growth, which controls circadian rhythms, melatonin output, which gives us an innate magnetic sense of direction. Now, when these EMF pulses, very low frequencies, start distorting that, what you'll find is... First of all, what you'll find is animals that are more in tune with that magnetic sense of direction, like birds, sharks, dolphins, whales. I mean, you'll find these animals dead, beached, falling from the sky, and scientists will be puzzled why that happens. But it's been proven, and the government knows this, because in 1972... there was something called Project Pandora, which they classified. I don't even know if it's still classified. I don't care. Project Pandora came from the 1972 Moscow embassy, the American embassy in Moscow. Every single person that came back stateside from that tour of duty came back with leukemia, and they wondered why. And, of course, they compartmentalized all this information, so nobody knew that everybody that was stationed at Moscow in 1972 had leukemia when they came back stateside. Well, they found out why. Russia had been bombarding the embassy with these very low-frequency EMF pulses, kind of like what we use when I was in the Army as a cryptologist, with a Toki-17 jammer, which jams communication so that some communications can't find its reception point. Now, this literally messes with the body, messes with the blood. It boils the blood. So you're going to see a lot more, things like that happen around these kind of RIMPAC war games. And to have such a small island being bombarded with that kind of EMF pulses is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, there needs to be... a panel that needs to address that. And the government's not going to tell you that it's dangerous, because they need to do it. Otherwise, they're not going to have communications.
Well, so these are all kind of big issues that I don't have a deep understanding on. But what I will say is, whenever I have bothered to look up at this download of information that you give me, So far, I haven't run into a dead end. So far, every time I have Googled and looked at what you're telling me, I have found accuracy behind it. And you're kind of jumping a lot, but I mean, I brought up
a little bit
about the VLF, and you were speaking about
water.
And so, and yeah. How this, just for the listener who might have tuned in to Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Hapa, Hendrix is on the phone with us right now, and Bob Yonke, an environmental lawyer, independent from this dialogue, but you can add to this at some point in here. We're looking at what happens when there are so many layers of contamination all around us, and we will isolate one problem or another, or this contaminant, another contaminant. But
what happens, you get the highest cancer rates in the world. That's what happens. And the United States has the highest cancer rates in the world. That's irrefutable.
Yes.
Well, one of the things that strikes me when I first started working with Kauai Rising on drafting the charter amendment for the GMOs was all the evidence that started coming forward that indicated that there were extreme and unusual health outcomes occurring here on this island. That this is a place that, to me, should be as close to pristine as what you can get on the planet. And part of my attraction for coming here was to create a space for my family and my grandchildren that would be safe and a place for me to spend the rest of my years. And the more I've learned about what's going on here, it's obviously not that. We've seen some extreme...
Our entire bioweapons program is based on the Nazi program, and we pulled it from something called Operation Dustbin. The Nazi bioweapons program started with IG Farben doing research on pesticides. So when I know these things, and when I came back and looked at and literally researched the GMOs, pouring atrazine all over the place and hiring Berkeley scientist Tyrone Hayes to say that it was okay, and he did research saying, wait a minute, Syngenta has atrazine that is, it's illegal in Switzerland to even use anywhere, and they spray it all over Kauai. That was the first red flag that went up in my mind. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, it's not just the atrazine. There was a report put out last year showing that the amount of pesticide use on Kauai is 10 times greater than some of the most heavily pesticide-treated fields in California, which is otherwise the state with the highest pesticide use in the country. What we really have here is a global hotspot for pesticide use and exposures. And most people are not aware of that. And it's true because of a number of things. First of all, the 16,000 acres that used to be sugarcane land that has now been converted into GMO test sites is not being used to grow food. They can't even sell what they grow over there as food. What they're doing is they're testing pesticides, and they're testing multiple forms of pesticides, some of which are not even commercially available yet. They're testing chemicals to decide whether or not they will be sold commercially. And so what's happening is that we have high pesticide application rates in addition to applying multiple pesticides, whereas in most farm communities you might get one or two. So, you know, in the cornfields of Illinois, most farmers will either use atrazine or they'll use glyphosate. They won't use them both. And that's all there is. And farmers are in the business of trying to minimize their costs so that they can earn more. So they use as little pesticide as they need to get the job done. Whereas here, we're exposing test crops to multiple applications of multiple pesticides, the likes of which is not occurring anywhere else on the planet.
I find that alarming, and the people of Kauai need to awaken to find that alarming as well.
And so, Hapa, when you did your water test, this was not downstream of those fields. This was in the uplands of Kapa'a. And so,
Kapai, yes, and Kapai. It was still, you still, the reason I found aluminum, nano aluminum particulates in the water there, which, I mean, it's unreal. I had to research a little bit about geoengineering, which there are several different kinds of geoengineering. One of them is called hygroscopic cloud busting, where they use polymers and sulfur dioxide and nano aluminum particulates, which have never been tested and which have been proven to cause upper respiratory tract infections, to allow aluminum to I mean, my stepmom lives on Kauai, lived there all her life, and she's got Alzheimer's right now. And the thing about Alzheimer's is when you get enough aluminum, you collect it in the brain, that's what happens. You get Alzheimer's. You know, there's countries that have no Alzheimer's, not one Alzheimer case in Libya, but they don't do any of that nanoparticulate geoengineering there, or they didn't. I don't know about now. But so what we have is not only do we have the GMOs poisoning our soil, but we have military and civilian planes using something that Dr. Edward Teller, the, you know, the father of the hydrogen bomb, depicted like in the 1970s. And these are called chemtrails, which are chemical trails, which are a lot different than condensation trails. And I just saw my friend Chrissy Bush on Facebook took a picture of chemtrails today on the island of Kauai. And these chemtrails are literally filled with things like, God, there's something called Welsbach particle seeding to combat global warming, and they spray the air with this. And what it is it's a chemical cocktail that has like thorium, barium, zinc, and like 2% of radioactive isotopes, and all these things just cascade down into the river, into the food that we eat, into the grass that the cows eat, and then we eat the cows. And I mean, it's literally it's creating such a toxic environment, not just around us, but within us, because we're ingesting all this food. Mm-hmm. And so that's why our cancer rates are just going through the roof. And I mean, there's an MIT researcher that said by the year 2025, 50% of all kids in America will have autism because there's so much aluminum particulates in the air and in the water that we drink and everything that we eat.
And Stephanie. She was going to be in here today, but she's speaking on Maui and Oahu, and she'll be speaking on Oahu on January 22nd. If we want her to speak here, she will. Just, you know, let us know. You're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. And we have Bob Yonke in here, environmental attorney, and Hapa Hendricks on the phone. Hapa, kind of pulling you back in one more time about the water. Yeah. Why did you pick the water there? And I want to say, I saw your pictures of what happened to you when you were doing this water experiment. I see that you are regaining your health. You, during the time of the forums, were still a little bit, I don't want to call you emaciated, but a little bit less than at your strength, still recovering. Can you tell us what happened? And why you picked your water there?
Well, because the water at Hopi Falls, I saw it had the least amount of toxins.
Okay, so you're looking for a pristine area, and so you did an experiment on yourself.
Yeah, I kind of, I guess I emulate the Johnny Knoxville Jackass franchise, but in a scientific version. The experiment was twofold. One was to prove that the waters on Kauai is toxic. And the other was to prove that I could literally cure anything that came to me. So what happened was, initially I became emetic, which means I was throwing up 10 times a day, basically. So I lost 89 pounds in less than 2 months.
And so you went from about 200 pounds to, what was your starting weight?
212 pounds was my starting weight, and 129 pounds was my lowest weight. And this is after drinking just one glass, like one, it was actually it's a teacup that I got. My sister has been a nurse at Wilcox Hospital for many, many years. So I got sterile cups from her, and I drank one of those tiny cups a day for 30 days, from January 2nd to January 31st, and
did
I lost almost 90 I'm sorry?
Did you change anything else in your diet?
Yeah, were you eating other things? I mean, you were...
Yeah, I kept my diet exactly the same. I kind of knew what I would get because I knew what was in the water. And the reason I tested the water is that water business I started many years ago with Brandon Roth, I knew how to test water. So I knew I was literally looking for the best and purest water, but I wanted to show that even that, the purest water on Kauai was incredibly toxic. And I had I kind of knew what I would get. As soon as I had lost my immune system, because I had worked with so much radiation using those Toki 17 jamming equipment and all kinds of surveillance equipment, I knew that my body was prone to leukemia. So within 2 months, I had incurred something called acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Now, to understand the medical process or the medical establishment, we all know, and this is another thing that I'm trying to prove, because I'm trying to push it on the Indian reservations, and that's why I'm in Denver, Colorado, and I was in South Dakota a little while ago. The issue with the Food and Drug Administration that I always say to people, and it never seems to sink in, but the Food and Drug Administration, every single one of their employees' paychecks, 40% of it comes directly from Monsanto, right? So they've already bought off the FDA. So if you want a great cure for something, look for things that the FDA banned, like B17, which kills cancer cells, banned by the FDA. Cannabis oil kills cancer cells, banned by the FDA. Now, there's an amazing thing that I use. It's called tetrasilver tetroxide, which is AG404, which the patent 20 years ago, a doctor named Marvin Antleman, a genius, he created this, and it literally it's an amazing thing that actually can cure AIDS. And of course, nobody knows about it because the pharmaceutical industries push AZT because there's more money in keeping people sick than curing them. And that's a given. I mean, people have got to start seeing that the FDA is no longer on their side. They're not a regulatory body that's actually helping people. They're actually working for Monsanto. And so that was the most important thing that I've seen. And another thing that I used when I got really sick was something called, and I had to black market these using a pharmaceutical company in Mexico, but this is called antineoplastons, which a guy named Dr. Stanislaus Brzezinski makes in Stafford, Texas. Now, these are protein peptides, so they're non-toxic, and they're so effective against cancer that the government's been trying to put this man in jail for 10 years. And so somebody recently, a friend of mine named Eric Marola, came out with a documentary called Cancer is Serious Business, which you can watch on YouTube. And you'll realize that the entire health industry is more about keeping people sick than getting people healthy. And that's kind of what I wanted to prove with NSTAIR Kauai.
So,
well, let me make a comment about that. I have a personal involvement in AIDS. My partner of many years died of AIDS, and so we went through a lot together.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
And I know one of the things that happened with AIDS was that during the Reagan administration in the 1980s, the administration shut down all the research related to AIDS. So there was nothing being done to help find solutions until the AIDS, the gay community got itself organized. And once that happened, it all shifted. And what happened first was that the community found the resources to launch the research on its own and then ended up developing the evidence to show what was working and what wasn't. And force the FDA to take action. And they got to the point where the FDA was acting on drug submissions within months, whereas historically the FDA takes years, 2 years, 4 years to act on anything. The message that should be learned from that experience Because now most people with AIDS survive it. And that's because of the drugs that were developed as a result of that process back in the 90s and the first part of the 2000s. And what we need to recognize is that the government will work for the people if the people demand action. And the government will not work for people. It will work for the corporations who have the money if the people are not organized to demand that the government function in the way it should. And one of the things that we're seeing with pesticides is that the government is not functioning. There is no cop on the beat. For example, I mean, let's just look at atrazine. You mentioned it earlier. It is one of the oldest pesticides. It's been around from the 1950s. The research was done back in the 60s and 70s to show that it made people sick. The last time that EPA reviewed the health effects of atrazine under FIFRA, the federal statute for regulating pesticides, was in 1993. They haven't done an update of the health research on atrazine for over 20 years. And it's during those 20 years that people like Theo Kohlborn, who you may know, who just died a month ago, a great researcher who took the lead in developing the whole field of endocrine disruptors. Her work showed that atrazine is one of the most powerful endocrine disruptors, that it interferes with the development of fetuses in the womb. So that by the time our babies are born, they are already impaired in some way or another, either from mental development, which is what shows up as autism, or in other forms of physical limitations. So, you know, when you look at autism, you have to wonder what's going on. When I was born, which is back in the middle of World War II, approximately one out of every 3,300 births was an autistic child. Now, the latest research that just came out last year, which was a study of 150,000 nurses and the children that they gave birth to, one out of seven of those children have autism, some form on the autistic spectrum. This is an incredible change. This is interfering with the human experience on this planet. Children born with autism do not become fully formed human beings. They don't have a full human experience. We're interfering with the experience of being human. And why is that? It's things like atrazine, which is an endocrine disruptor, and it's now seen that autism starts in the womb. Autism is probably one of the most significant effects of the endocrine disrupting chemicals. And EPA is not even looking at it.
Can you tell the listener who doesn't know that word endocrine, what is an endocrine disruptor? It's not just damage to what's going on in the womb. All of us operate on our endocrine system all the time, correct?
Our endocrine system is...
Like hormones or
it's the system that produces the hormones in our bodies. The hormones are the critical triggers that sequence the developmental process in the womb. So it's the hormones that determine when you start to develop a heart, when you start to develop a brain, how that brain develops, what the sequencing of the formation of the human being in the womb.
And even post-womb, like the endocrine system would be your fertility or sterility. It would be when you reach puberty, lots of different things, not even all in the reproductive cycle.
Sure.
But many other things. So it impacts pretty broad. Just an extreme example is the rise in autism.
Well, keep in mind that, you know, when a baby girl is born, she is carrying with her all of the eggs that she will ever drop. So her babies, the egg portion of her babies, come out with her from mom, from her mother. And if those eggs have already been distorted or corrupted chemically by the chemicals that her mom were exposed to during the pregnancy, there's nothing that that girl can do to fix that.
And what I've had with different scientists and people actually in the hog industry talking about when, you know, in more isolated feeding operations and where the short genetics, like we have, you know, baby every year, they're seeing that collapse happen very quickly. It, you know, like in humans, we've got a decade, I mean, 20 years between generations, if not more.
Right.
In animals, they're seeing this manifest pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I've seen this, the experiments and the results, and so, you know.
A sow, a female hog, can start having babies after about 18 or 24 months.
I think somewhere. Sooner than that, you know, less than a year. But so they start having the babies, and
right.
So we're seeing the genetic damage pretty quickly.
Yes. And despite the fact that we're seeing these horrendous increases in these kinds of afflictions, I mean, to think of one out of every seven babies born to the women in this study having some form of autism, to me, is absolutely mind-boggling. It's so astounding that what really astounds me the most is that women all across the planet are not standing up and demanding action. You know, all these women are giving birth to babies who will not become fully formed human beings capable of, in some cases, loving or communicating with others on the planet. And women are not up in arms saying this is unacceptable.
Well, in the 2491 movement here that we were putting out, trying to even just get that baby step of pesticide being disclosed, if you looked, I mean, blessings on all the men who helped, but it was dominantly women.
Yes.
Dominantly women.
No, I'm not saying there are no women.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, hey, women here are really like going, hey. And moms across America are working hard and pulling back in a little bit of what Hoppe was bringing up there is when we're looking at these.
I want to apologize to any woman who thinks I was saying that there are no women out there who are defending motherhood and their children. I did not mean to say that.
Oh,
at all.
I wasn't accusing you of that, but I just was honoring all these women who, with their illnesses and their babies, sleeping out in the rain, grandmothers that were sick, and people with all these different problems, it was really an ordeal to spend the amount of time that it took to sit there and do that. And I am going to call out my friend Ross Kagawa for a moment here, who he spoke, there's a, in the article in the paper, about the 2015...
Let's remind everybody that Ross Kagawa is a member of the county council here in Kauai, and that he was one of the members of the county council that voted to instruct the county clerk not to count the signatures on the petitions to put the Kauai Rising charter amendment on the ballot.
That's correct. And then on the front page of the paper, talking about the priorities for the council for 2015, it says, you know, getting back to basics and what means the most. And so that was the Puhi Road and fixing up Puhi Road. And yes, Puhi Road has problems, but it says we're not going to waste time this year. That's really hard, and there I get along fine with him, but I'm calling him out right now, right on the radio, because that was not a waste of time. That was a very painful amount of time. That's not recreational. I would say that there was a lot of bonding that did happen amongst all these people who came together across different demographics, ethnicities, money, all that kind of thing. People came together and sat out there hard in the rain, not being able to go to the bathroom, all that kind of stuff. And right now, the movement is a little bit getting raked over the coals, and being, I would say, disparaged in some of these comments. And it's actually a very big deal. Yes, roads matter, but so does soil, so does health, so does all these different elements. And so kind of trying to pull these threads in together a little bit with Hapa, who's on the line talking about some of the other toxicities besides the pesticides. We have Bob Yonke, who I will have you explain in a little bit, your history across the country in actually making difference against big monolithic companies like the steel mills in Pittsburgh and the copper mines in Arizona. Very, very big organizations, and you did positively affect change. So, like, on this show, I like my happiness to bummer ratio to be like 3-1, so people don't just slit their wrists because they, you know,
absolutely
hear all this bad stuff. But we have these challenges, and yes, a road matters, but very, very deeply does our health and waking people up. And you said, how come women can't get up and fight it? There's a level of ridicule in the media and how it's handled. We use words like conspiracy theorist to just wholesale put people down who are calling into question what other people might call the shadow government. Hapa is somebody who is highly aware, far more aware than I am on this. Pulling it back, Hapa, I want to ask you something. That toxin that you said was in the water that you drank, what's the name of that toxin? Because I want to see that tested. It's really important to me that when I'm on the air here, I'm not promoting wrong information. I saw how ill you were. But, you know, pigs and rats and birds and all kinds of other things are living in those streams, and they're drinking it, sure. And they're not emaciated. And I saw how you even had seemingly kidney problems. It was hard for you to stand for very long. Is that
The ethylene dibromide, which is found in a lot of the chemtrails, are found in the water as well as aluminum particulates. And anytime you have a lot of heavy metals in the body, you're going to get really sick. That's just how it is.
So why aren't the pigs sick?
Okay.
Wild pigs?
Oh, there's no way they cannot be.
Last summer, there was a report in the Garden Island of hunters who were reporting deceased
pigs,
animals in the wild, and they would report that when they took a pig, you know, when they killed one and cut it open, that they were full of
tumors. Okay.
Oh. Yeah, I could totally believe that.
And so
that.
They would just leave the carcasses there in the forest. They wouldn't even bring them back.
Okay. All right.
I'd actually like to address, I had done some research, which means I did surveillance on the head of the AIDS research program of the World Health Organization and her husband, which it was the director of the World Health Organization. Now, this is Jonathan Mann and Mary Louise Mann. I kind of know everything about the AIDS thing, and he said a couple of things that didn't kind of mesh with what I know about AIDS. So is there any way I can get a little bit of that information out?
Sure. I mean,
well, the only thing that I wanted to point out about AIDS was that the FDA finally responded when the community that needed to be served got itself organized and demanded action and did it in ways that involved bringing resources to the table, finding the experts to actually do the research like you're doing, testing some of these drugs that the FDA was not testing, partly because the chemical companies, the pharmaceutical companies, were not interested in testing it. So the community got the resources together, did the testing, developed the data, took it to the government, and demanded action. That's why I brought it up. We can make the government work for us, but it takes a lot of effort.
Yes. I had a listener text me and say, we all drink Kauai water and we're not all dying of leukemia. I have a few friends that I like to think they will survive it, but, you know, we don't have a high percentage of people. Is this because you had all this radiation earlier in your life, or how do you respond to that? Because everybody is drinking Kauai water.
I think she's talking about the Kauai water that's processed. I'm talking about Kauai river water. Totally different. Nobody's drinking Kauai river water.
Right. We're drinking the groundwater.
Right. Big difference.
Okay. All right. So I just wanted to give that listener that.
Well, Hapa, did you test the tap water that comes from the county and compare the results with what you were seeing in the river?
No, I just tested the river waters.
It would be interesting to test the county water, too, and see whether or not some of the chemicals that you found are there, but perhaps in lower concentrations.
To find that the only water that's fluoridated on that island is at the Pacific Missile Range. There's no fluoridation in the water on Kauai.
That's correct.
An amazing thing, because that's the only thing where you'll find molecular biologists across the world unanimously saying, please do not put hexafluorosilic acid in the water, because it is a neurotoxin that's proven to drop a child's IQ 7 points. It's proven to collect aluminum particulates in the brain.
Yeah, so that's not our problem there. We want to stay focused on what we need to fix.
Yeah, so I have had another listener text in, and I happen to know this person who hunts 3 or 4 days a week. It says there are a lot of diseases of wild pigs which have become more common in recent years when the pig population increased. So that was his piece, too. So it is a lot of, they have more common diseases. So, but he's saying that the pig population has increased, so that's also, I'm sure you have more pigs, you're going to have more problems. But,
sure.
Yeah. So thank you, listeners, for bringing in information. Hapa, I'm going to be opening the phone lines up pretty soon here. So do you have any key thoughts to leave us with? Another show, you can come back in. Please stay listening, and you can even call back in soon, but I need to be able to make the phone more available.
All right, no worries.
And
thank you for having me.
Yeah, but I'm going to tell you a couple of these other things. People are all texting me. I appreciate that people are listening. I have a person mentioning their ophthalmologist's name, but I won't say that person's name. This person's ophthalmologist told him that the FDA gets a kickback on the prescriptions that they approve. With that mindset, it's plainly that they get the motivation to do this.
Well, what happened is back in the Clinton administration in the 1990s, there was not enough staff resources at the FDA to process all the drugs, and partly because of the pressure from the gay community to look harder and process a lot of these drug applications related to AIDS, among other things. The rules were changed so that the FDA started charging the pharmaceutical companies large fees to process drug applications. So instead of the FDA being funded by taxpayers, its drug review program is primarily, if not completely, funded by the pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
So this has definitely had an impact on the way they review these applications. And it's partly a response to the fact that when the need to increase the resources available to the FDA was recognized in the mid-90s, the Republicans, who had then just taken over control of the House back in the 1994 election, refused to appropriate additional funding, and that the only way that was available to the administration at that time to increase the resources available to the FDA was to start charging the pharmaceutical companies. So, you know, there are a lot of things here that are politics.
Right. So, yeah, it's a complex problem. We're going to continue to discuss it. Hoppe, do you have any closing remarks that you would like to be sharing with the listener?
No, thank you for having me on. I think that was it. Hopefully that was very informative to some people. I'd like to say, I don't know, I absolutely do not trust the Food and Drug Administration. And I literally look at everything that they say they make illegal and, you know, incorporate that into my own health paradigm. And I think that's a very healthy way to look at life.
Well, I have had a person on, and I'd like to introduce him to Bob and some of these other scientists that, you know, has been career with the Environmental Protection Agency. And, you know, he shares, he's now retired, and then, you know, all these people are a little nervous to even speak out very much, but that there's a lot of pressure on them to find results the way that they're supposed to find results, and a lot of rules that keep them within a narrow scope of what they're looking for. You know, it's a difficult position to be in there because there is an incredible amount of pressure, even all the way up to the presidential level. And so I'm not exonerating what happens there or denying it. I'm just saying it seems even like the casualties of this industry, you know, when they're out of it, they're like, whoa, you know. And they might really care while they're in there. They're just not able to do a lot. And when you're talking about the funding stream and the direction of it, and when you're saying Monsanto pays these people's positions, really it's their part of the funding stream. So it's not a direct payment,
well,
but it's the funding
stream. Not positions, but they, Monsanto pays 40% of every single FDA employee's paycheck. So,
because that's how much they're
it's called a User Fee Act.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it has to do with their particular submissions, what they need to have approved. Each pharmaceutical company, when it submits an application, has to pay.
Right. I mean, if you go to the FDA and you say, I have a cure for cancer, Anthony Hauk, the FDA commissioner, will tell you that they will not review any cures for cancer unless you are affiliated with a large pharmaceutical industry. That's a direct quote to Hoppe Hendrick. So, I mean, I have no faith in the Food and Drug Administration. And from being a surveillance guy that used to do surveillance on medical doctors for the World Health Organization, whistleblowers that were killed because they whistleblew that said AIDS was a bioweapon, you know, created by the National Institute of Health, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they're not doing anything to help get that information out or promulgate information like that. They're actually covering that up.
Well, the reality is that a small developer, someone without a lot of resources, who develops a drug, doesn't have the ability to pay the Food and Drug Administration to review the drug.
Oh, I mean, definitely not. It costs hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, even if it's not hundreds of millions, it's definitely millions. And most
phase 3 clinical trials is $100 million.
They can be. They can be. To get there, you don't need to spend that much money to start with. But the amount of money that's needed for a small developer is usually too much.
I've kind of lost my faith in the FDA to actually promulgate good and healthy cures for things.
Well,
and then people have to fight for that on their own. And I've seen Dr. Brzezinski go through hell for the last 10 years, and the CIA put in an asset named Devorah to need to not only debunk his anti-neoplastons, which work to cure cancer, but also steal it and sell it to Elan Pharmaceuticals. So I've seen some really crazy stuff the FDA has done.
Well, he's also won some court cases.
Yeah.
Oh, recently. Just recently. Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, after 10 years. So I'm very proud of him. Incredibly proud of him.
Well, wonderful. Well, thank you, Hoppe, and another time we'll have you call in. But please stay listening, and if you see a space where you want to pop back in, I'll have you do that. We're at the top of the hour, and so we're going to honor our underwriters and a few things like that, and I'll probably be getting a couple other calls, but you can pop back in. Okay?
Mahalo.
Okay, mahalo. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Soapbox, This is Felicia. That was Hoppe Hendrix. I have Bob Yonke in the studio with me, too, as well as Eric Cannon and Marshall. So this program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Bali High Realty, The Copper Man, Kauai Kiss, and we're going to hear about the Lions Golf Tournament.
Coldwell Banker, Bali High Realty, and Hanalei, serving Kauai since 1978, providing personalized real estate sales and rental services. Coldwell Banker, Bali High Realty, also supports KKCR and the Kauai Independent Food Bank. More information at balihigh.com or by calling 826-7244.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com or 639-3456.
Kauai Kiss, Kauai Island Shopping Service, Kauai's new premier personal shopper and grocery delivery service. When you leave the shopping to Kauai Kiss, your vacation rental will be pre-stocked with groceries. Your Kauai Kiss personal shopper will also gladly make town runs for locals, delivering island-wide with aloha. More information at 822-KISS or at kauaikiss.com.
It's time again for the Kauai North Shore Lions Club annual golf tournament, Saturday, January 10th at the Mackay Golf Course in Princeville. Registration starts at 6:30 a.m., followed by a shotgun start at 8 a.m. A golf ball drop has been added this year. Participants adopt a ball, which is then dropped from the helicopter in the practice area, as well as the usual fun events and contests. Entry fee includes lunch and lucky ticket drawings. All proceeds fund scholarships for North Shore students. More information online at KauaiNorthShoreLions.org. Click on Golf Tournament.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Moloa'a, K284AL, Haleiwa.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So, Bob, help us to stay empowered. You know, it seems like some of these entities are so big when we're talking about very large, very low frequency. That's the U.S. military. That's very difficult to get them to have to listen to us at really any level. What have you done to give the listener a little bit of knowledge of where you have had some strengths?
Well, I've been on different sides of the fence. I started off fresh out of law school in the Pennsylvania Environmental Agency, working for the Attorney General's office and advising the Air Bureau on how to clean up the steel industry. So that I developed the legal litigation strategy for cleaning up 9 steel mills in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is the largest steelmaking state in the country at that time, and the industry was the largest industry in the state. So, the company that I took the lead on was Bethlehem Steel, which is the second largest steel producer in the world. U.S. Steel is the single largest steel producer. We took those on first, but we had. So it took two and a half years for me to convince the governor that we should do that. He was very reluctant for all sorts of reasons that I'm sure everybody can imagine. But ultimately, there was a realization that nothing was going to happen from that industry if the state didn't get its act together and take some action. So we ended up actually setting the model for developing technologies that at that time, this was back in the 70s, this was in the very first years after the enactment of the Federal Clean Air Act, which was what we were using. And we were essentially saying to the industry, you have to invest in developing technologies that don't exist. We couldn't point to somewhere else on the planet and say, here's how you do it, go do it. We were saying to them, this is a serious public health problem. The pollution levels then were 4 times higher than the current federal standard for this kind of air pollution. So it was horrific. And we had the kind of data showing that the carcinogens were way off the charts in the neighborhoods around the mills. the kinds of things that should be collected here. So when I look at what's going on in Kauai, one of the things that's clear to me is the state is not doing its job, because I know what it means for the state to do its job. I did it once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know what that means. The state is not out here. They did one brief water quality survey last spring.
Right.
A year ago.
The Department of Ag and the Department of Health found every single strain they tested
had pesticides in it. Yes. And but they dismissed the numbers because they said, oh, well, all these numbers are below the EPA permissible limits, and except one.
They weren't
except for
all,
one test. Yeah. But most of them were. And that then takes you back to the fact that EPA is not doing its job, because its limits, like I mentioned before, for atrazine were set last in 1993,
mm-hmm.
and don't account for any of the health effects that have been observed from atrazine since then, like the endocrine effects. So the whole system is broken. The government is not doing its job. So one of the things... The next campaign that I got involved in, I was on the other side of the fence. That was where we saw that the copper smelters in the western United States, which were responsible for 70% of the SO2, sulfur dioxide, being emitted in the 11 western states, were causing acid rain in the high-altitude watersheds of the Rockies. And we were on the path of acidifying those lakes, destroying the aquatic systems there, the critters, the trout, and the organisms that live there. And the government, again, was not doing its job in that case. And so I organized four states, activists in four states, and developed a litigation campaign where we ultimately were able to clean up the copper industry by enforcing the Clean Air Act. But there was a law to enforce. Here, we also have laws to enforce. And the same thing could be done. And again, it would take initiatives from the community. We could go out and collect, like Carl Berg is doing. I mean, Carl is actually doing this for Surfrider. Is doing water quality sampling, testing the waters in the canals over there on the west side and some of the discharges. That data could be used then in a citizen's lawsuit under the Clean Water Act to enforce the law. And the other thing that could be done, the other major mode of exposure on the west side, is by wind blowing off the fields, carrying both the pesticides when they are applied, because when they're applied, it's normally in a spray form, and a significant amount of that spray doesn't go on the plants or the ground. It stays in the atmosphere, and it gets blown into the town, into Kekaha or Waimea, and into the schools over there. And that's why the kids are getting sick. And there is a law in Hawaii that this kind of windblown transport of contaminants is prohibited. And that's not enforced.
Right. And waterborne. Like another issue, and just for people that might want to know, I believe we have something called the Ahamoku system here. This is a new thing through the Department of Land and Natural Resources where they are adapting some traditional methods of looking after the land and keeping it in sustainable ecosystems. And Moku is larger than Ahupua. It's a region.
Right.
There's five
on the
Moku island. On this island, and then Ni'ihau is another one that is part of the county. And I know tomorrow night they're having an Ahamoku meeting, and they are looking at what's going. This is for the, I think the Kona. Actually, if there's an Akamai listener, call in and correct me. But the Mahalapu is having some challenges there. They're putting in a dairy farm. I'm not necessarily opposed to dairy. Dairy, you know, I'm all about food. But in this particular valley, it's they're looking at, you know, putting in 2,000 head of cattle in a thing that has clay soil, so it doesn't have a good percolation rate.
Right.
And so this is not a chemical or an artificial chemical. It's heavy nitrogen that is going down. Carlberg has been helping with that and already finding heavy tests.
Yeah, he's been doing some testing and has found that the highest levels of certain biological contaminants, like bacteria, are over there on the stream that runs through the dairy fields, where the dairy would be. And it's not clear exactly why that's already so high, where there isn't 1,000 cows yet. But that is a warning sign that there's something about that area.
There's already a challenge.
That it's running off instead of percolating into the soil and being destroyed by the natural organisms in the soil. That's not happening.
I think I have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, this is Billy Kohilauli.
Hey.
Moku, Southside Kona.
Thank you, Billy. Thank you for calling in. Billy, I just want to tell the listener, you do all kinds of amazing things at cultural restoration down there in the Po'ipu area. And so I really appreciate your mana'o, your knowledge on this topic. Are you following the Maha'ulipu issue?
Oh, yes, yes.
Are you going to the Aha Moku meeting tonight? Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Can you fill us in a little bit? And your background is Kanaka Mo'ole,
right.
Indigenous Hawaiian. And so that gives you a little bit stronger kuleana and, in my opinion, voice in this type of topic. So please share with us your mana'o.
About Kaneuluma?
Or about Mahalapu, too. You could tell us a little bit about your project, but then tell us about what you're feeling on the
about
dairy.
Mahalapu, as a moku of the area, it's going to really affect us really bad. The water, the air, and if it goes into the our ocean water, it's going to really be bad. It's going to ruin our ocean. But see, what it's going to help, it's going to hurt is the air. We're going to smell all that and the flies. That thing is going to go to about 20 miles. That's how far you're going to smell that thing. Because we live in Po'ipu, between the sewer plants from the Hyatt and the Kehuna sewer plant, every time the wind blows, we get the smell. Either way it blows, we get the smell. So I can't imagine if we get this dairy in with 2,000 cows, we're going to smell all the whole area in Po'ipu. It's going to be polluted, I guess.
So I'm a little surprised that this project has as much clout as it does. Do you have any insights onto that? Because I know Po'ipu is a very big stronghold of the tourism industry, and when I was doing my research in the past number of months, it seems like that is the fattest area for paying real property tax. So I would think that they would have, even however Unpono it might be, a lot of say in what's being chosen by the county, right? So, like, here's the big high dollar paying area. Why is the tourism industry sitting second to this particular project? Do you know?
Really, I don't know, but like I said, we're all downwind. This project is going to be above us. And our water is very important. Our water is very important to us.
Billy, I have a question. When I was doing some just walking the canals over there on the west side.
And the south side too, yeah.
And near Kikaha.
Okay.
Around the military reservation. And I found a young man over there who was working the lifeguard station, who told me the story of the die-off of the urchins in the beaches over there about 6 years ago, five, 6 years ago. And it seemed to me to be related to when
the pesticide use was increasing significantly over there on those fields. And I'm wondering if you have any information about what might have triggered that die-off as an urgent.
I think the it's the runoff. You know, there's a lot of runoff going down into the water from the rivers. And like in Poipu, I think it's the golf course and all those houses that they spray pesticide, I guess, pesticide for poison or for rats or animals, you know. It runs in the water if it rains. So I guess it goes in the water. I know a lot of stuff goes in the water, even though we don't know. Even like Poipu water ocean, the chlorine goes in the water, the swimming pool, a lot of stuff goes in our water.
Yeah, chlorine is deadly.
How is the fishing there in Poipu? Have you noticed a difference or a change over the decades?
Oh, it's really changed. There's not hardly any fish anymore.
How about the limu?
Even limu. Like my friend came by yesterday. I said, bro, I checked them out. They look like it's gone. So, it's really bad. The water, the fishing. I mean, there's fish, but, you know, not as much as before.
And so in Mahalaupu, did you spend time there as a child? I know that whole area is kind of your area, but did you spend much time in that valley? Like, when I look at what you have done in Poipu, you've done such an amazing amount of restoration.
Yeah.
And I know above it, kind of on the A and B land, there is an incredible amount of vahipana there, sacred areas. How is Mahalaupu? Is that also as rich?
It's really rich and fat, that place, if we keep it together yet. Once we destroy it, it never will come back as a beautiful place again. We need that place. We got to preserve our place. This place is where the water comes from. You know, there's a lot of water coming down there. All Poipu water comes from all around there. Waita, all the water up there. Comes direct down to all, lead out to all these little rivers.
But a lot of it's been re-diverted, right? It's been diverted away, and then so that's why that area that you have caretaken has gone dry? Is that correct?
Because they shut down our eye water. But see, now we want to put them back. They diverted the water to Mahalaupu side for all that farming area.
And am I correct, Mahalaupu was a big lo'i all up in that valley?
Right, it was all taro patches.
Because it's got the good clay soil.
Right.
So with the Ahamoku group, I mean, what is the position they're taking?
Well, we were working with the Ahamoku. We're working with the state, and we're trying to work the culture way, the Hawaiian way, like preserve the water, preserve the land, preserve the ocean, preserve the air. That's the way we're going, in a culture way, through the Hawaiian Uvalu.
So, what would you like to see, or what? I know that you have a pretty heavy voice, in that a pretty strong voice, I should say, in your community. Are you being listened to? Are you speaking to the county directly? Have you spoken to the landowner? Are they receiving you?
Oh no, we haven't spoken to them yet, but we've seen people work for them at our meetings.
And have you tried speaking to them?
Well, I talked to some of them that, you know, I mean, I guess they're getting paid for do their job. But I talked to some of them.
And what is their response?
They're for the dairy.
And the dairy's going to produce about 10 jobs, is that right?
15 jobs.
15 jobs, okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just wish they could just put that over the hill somewhere, put it up in the highlands. I have heard that still yet there would be drift down. You know, it seems like certainly we could disperse the animals broadly enough. It's not so much that I personally am against milk production, but it seems like it's been a little not listened to. I don't understand why they make these choices and then bring it to the people after all the infrastructure has been put in and they've done a lot of work. My understanding is they've bought a herd of pregnant cattle and then had to even sell it because there's been blocks and things and not letting them come out here. Were you part of the petition gathering that happened I read about in the paper?
Yes. But do you know when we had the Maloa Farm?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, a pig dairy?
Yes.
I mean, a dairy?
Yes.
Every time we had to pass that, everybody had to roll the windows up. They couldn't take it. They had to roll the windows up and pass. Or they couldn't take that.
Yeah, I think that what you breathe is hard, and probably what is even more significant is what ends up in the water.
Right.
And that can hurt the fishing. I've been paying attention enough that the nitrogen elements are a big part of the challenge there, that it hurts the fish, that you get an algae bloom, different things like that. Bob, do you know anything about that?
Well, the primary effect of nitrogen is eutrophication of the waters that it flows into, which is...
Eutrophication?
Eutrophication.
Eutrophication. What does that mean? I don't know that word.
Well, it stimulates... It's what you're saying. The nitrogen is actually a fertilizer for algae. That's the one way to think about it, is that it feeds the algae.
Okay.
So the algae is always there. It's not like you're adding algae to a place that doesn't have it. But what you're doing is you're feeding it so that it dominates everything else instead of being in balance with everything else that it used to share the ocean with. And once it becomes dominant, and when the algae dies, the dead algae consumes all the oxygen in the water and everything else dies. That's eutrophication.
Yes. Well, thank you, Billy. Is there anything further that you would like to share with the listening audience?
Wait. I have three main county wells on that property, and it's owned by Grove Farm, and they have to get a EIS.
An environmental impact statement, yes.
Right. And then I want to invite you to tomorrow night's meeting.
Okay.
We're going to have them at 6:30, 6 p.m. at the crater. At the crater, you know Poipu Crater?
Yes, I do.
You just climb up the crater, you hang a left. You're going to see all the cars there. I wish you could make it.
I'll make it. Thank
because,
you for inviting me.
Your friend Sarah is going to make it.
Okay, great. Well, I will make it. I appreciate what's done. I really appreciate the intention behind the Ahamoku system and what we have achieved in Haena with stewardship,
right.
Co-stewardship.
Right.
I think that that's a really good direction to go.
Yes.
Now, obviously, Mahalupu is private land, so
right.
The stewardship is working with, state land, with the Department
right,
of
right.
Land and Natural Resources, but, don't despair. I think that I kind of think in this case, even the thing that always comes up is number one is economy, and that causes me to struggle because we can have a sustenance economy, not just a dollar currency economy. But in this case, it doesn't seem like the economy is with this project. The economy would be... really with the tourist industry, and that's not normally the big friend of the indigenous people, with the Hawaiian people. It's not the enemy, but it's not the big friend. But I think in this case, there is a very, very significant loss that can happen even just from stink, right? Even just from the threat of stink. And I know that I was at some community meeting in Kailua, and I heard that the hotel, the Hyatt, was saying that they're not even really getting a lot of bookings for next year on their big conventions, and that that's a big piece of their business, and it's down because when a company is thinking of going someplace, they think, we don't know if there's going to be this dairy farm within, you know, downwind or upwind this. So they think, well, we could go to Maui, you know, we could go somewhere else. And so it can have very significant impacts. So I think that the economics is probably going to be really strong in the end. So any last thing to share? I know I have another caller holding.
We filed a complaint with the DLNR.
Okay. From the Ahamoku system?
Yes.
Okay.
And what did you ask for?
To move the dairy.
Okay. And when did you file that?
Preserve the land, preserved culture.
And when was that filed?
20 days ago.
Okay, so I can maybe get paperwork on that or a little bit of an update on that when I come to the meeting tomorrow?
Right, you bet.
Okay, I would like to stay on top of that.
Okay.
Okay, thank you so much.
Mahalo.
Mahalo, Billy. All right, and you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. We've got another caller, and we're going to take that call, and then I've got two gentlemen sitting in here that have really not spoken yet. I'm going to give them a little chance to give their mana'o. Aloha, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. Thanks for letting me talk here a bit. Papa Hendricks was great tonight. I was sad to hear him have to get off the air, but the other callers, everything's been so informative. About the dairy and the water down there. Remember Surf Rider did the test down there, and then the Department of Health, I believe it was, or Department of Water came from Honolulu to validate the tests of the water that Surf Rider was coming up with. And they and the Hawaiian dairy farmers said, okay, we'll take our tests too. And they took them, and the Department of Water came up with very different results than the Hawaii dairy farmers did, so they said, let's do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Take your sample, and I'll take mine, and we'll split them. I'll take half of yours, and you take half of mine. And go do your tests, and we'll go do ours, and then we'll talk about it. And that was a great idea. Then the next week was Thanksgiving, and nothing was reported, and that was understandable. And then the next week, nothing was reported. Till the permits came out that it had been approved over there. And nobody mentioned anything, but I come to hear later that the head of the Department of Water had been terminated, and they got a new head of the department in over there. So I don't know. Have you been following this?
I have been following it. And those permits that were approved were building permits. So that's not permits for the whole process. That's building permits. Though, what they do have is that is ag land, and I will say that a number of the visitor industry properties like the Hyatt, they got a variance on ag land. So they got a variance away from it being ag land. They put visitor industry in there, so then the ag people say, hey, what? You know, you got a variance. You came into ag land. This is an ag use. So they have some legitimacy in that argument, but so when it said that on the headline of the paper, it made it sound like that was already a yes. But what that was a yes for is to build the building. And so what's interesting to see when these companies are under fire and they continue to just move ahead and put the investment in again and again, you know, they don't take the distress of the community very seriously. And they don't really take action on it.
In this situation, it was like the government, somewhere along the way, they told them it's going to be all right. Go ahead, do your grubbing and grading right now, you know, while the permit is pending. They wouldn't have invested that much money into this project without knowing that they'd go ahead with the project.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, because certainly the investors end up being victims in the whole thing, and so does the landowners, you know, at some degree. There is all kinds of challenges, and so sometimes it's really, really difficult to see why, you know, a greater amount of homework isn't done on the front end and why the public isn't brought in until the 11th hour. You, I know, are a part of the sovereignty movement, and when we have something called Section 106, which is where we look at the historic elements whenever development is being done, that usually comes out in the 11th and a half hour. So instead of coming out at the very beginning and trying to be in alignment with Hawaiian historic sites and practices, they ask at the very, very end, when all the investment and the millions of dollars have been laid out in planning and design and development, and the contracts are signed, everybody's there, and then they go, okay, well, let's ask the indigenous people, do they have any objection, right? And it's very, very frustrating to me that things are left that far behind.
Well, once the buildings are approved, what's left?
Once the buildings are approved, what's left? Well, that's just a different piece of it. They still have to do this environmental impact statement.
They don't have to. They're offering to, is what it seems like to me. And I think environmental impact statements are perhaps as easy to buy as politicians. And so we're in this dilemma. All of a sudden, they're going to come back with an environmental impact statement that says that land can handle more contamination than 20 times over the amount of pollution that's in the Waiapili stream already. I mean, I don't know. There is no benefit for Kauai here. They keep saying that it's for bringing milk to the island for the kids and this kind of stuff, but all that milk is sold once it goes to Oahu and processed over there to Metagold. Metagold has no obligation.
Well, that milk will be, I'm sure, mostly sent around the state, and what we've seen is that the Ulupono dairy efforts are they're investing over on Hawaii Island. Marshall's leaning over.
That's right. They've signed an agreement of sale to buy Cloverleaf Dairy, which is the last locally owned and operated large-scale dairy in the state.
So there's a statewide goal to be the milk provider. And so it goes over there, it gets processed, and it gets sent back out and around. I would say if I was making an argument in their favor, having the milk produced in Hawaii still is milk produced in Hawaii, you know, where we are less dependent out, you know, on the shipping from the ocean. I know many people say humans don't need to eat milk, cheese, stuff like that, but in fact, we eat it, whether we need it or we don't. It's something that is in our diet pretty heavily. So that is that particular argument. So
the minor benefit that would be to the people of Kauai is nothing compared to with the devastation of the land.
Well, I mean, I think that's the main point. Caller, I have such a low connection with you. I'm going to want to kind of let you go. You brought up a lot of really good points. I just can't really pod you up very well.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And Eric, you've been sitting here quiet. And, you know, what is your mana'o?
Well, it's been a great show, and you guys have been talking about a lot of informative stuff. I kind of kept my mouth shut, let you guys do all the talking. One thing I did want to say was the Vandana Shiva seminar. She's coming back to the island.
She's going to be on Oahu, and then she's going to be on Maui.
Oh, she's not coming
she's
back
She's not coming
us?
Here. I'm going there.
Really?
I'm going to go over there. I think that a number of people are going to go over. We're going to be really present with the legislature. It's the opening of the legislature on Wednesday. And for what people, it's really important for people to know is once the legislative season starts, once there is that January 21st date, no more bills come in. And there's an onslaught of bills, like 3,000. I'm anticipating there's going to be a lot of preemption bills. I've spoke with a couple of our political leaders trying to make sure there's a preemption on preemption bills, which means preemption means that the state or the feds can tell the county what to do and for us to lose our right to protect the health of the land. We know that there's a big power grab going on. The election didn't work well for the very, very significant minority who are informed and impassioned on this issue. As a lot of these things were done at 40%. We were lucky, like Hawaii Island got their ban, and Maui got their moratorium, and Kauai got our Ordinance 960, but, you know, as soon as we got it, it was kind of taken from us by the courts.
Well, Vandana Shiva, she came to Kauai in 2011, I believe it was, and I did film that seminar, so if anybody wants to listen to that seminar, if you go up on YouTube and type in Vandana Shiva on Kauai, you'll see several videos up there, and it was a pretty amazing seminar. I mean, I could watch it right now and still be very happy with everything I heard.
So Vandana, if she tells me, Vandana.
Vandana.
Vandana. She is from India, and she has been, you know, a voice across the globe calling awareness to the importance of natural
one of the
farming.
10 most motivational people in the world, I think she was rated, and then one of the 7 most powerful women in Asia. So
right.
Yeah,
so
she's definitely a big name, and she definitely, the way she speaks, you know why. She's amazing.
Okay, and I've got another caller. I'm going to be taking a few calls. I'm going to keep them really short. I've got John in here who has something to share, something I want to get out of you. Eric, we had a young man, just breaks my heart, 19-year-old man, killed Saturday night from Waimea. He got hit by a car walking alongside the road, but a speeding officer ran him over coming to the site. And it's just as awful as it gets. I've been looking at the young man's Facebook page. He just looks like, he reminds me of my son, I have to say it. And, you know,
I went to the site?
Coming, responding to the 9/11 call, and this young man, Michael Coker, he was killed by the officer's speeding car.
So a car hit him as he's walking on the side of the road, and then a police officer on the way to the 9/11 call hit him again.
Ran over him, yes. And what we also saw this week was the 3 officers who shot the man, Dickie Lewis, off of his roof. They basically, there was a financial settlement. They're not saying the amount, but they don't have a repercussion. And so it's what happens around the country and the world. It just seems like we need just a little bit more restraint on the use of force.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure the officer did not mean to take a life of this young man, but speed kills, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they knew where the accident was, and I don't know what happened, but very, very, very saddened to see that. I'm sure the officer's in a lot of pain. The family, the parents, just must be completely devastated. Thank you for holding. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, apropos the poison. Sometimes I'm wondering whether we aren't barking up the wrong tree, because it is our Kama'aina families, the Robinson, the Faye case, who are giving these people the leases. We need to try to get them to take these leases and see whether everything is still up and up with when they gave them to them a long time ago. It don't seem to be our friends anymore, these families. They are seeing to it that our soil is poisoned and our children too. Sad. Maybe we can address them directly and see what's going on, you know, whether they can halt to this.
Well, their people are joining the government, right? They're getting elected into office, and it hasn't come out.
The Robinsons and Mike Faye and
they're employees.
They're holding the leases. They're not politicians necessarily, you know. And Steve Case didn't get elected last time.
Right. I'm saying
that's good.
Yeah.
I think we should address them directly rather than telling the giant companies that we can't do anything about anyway to stop whatever they're doing. Stop through the families, the process.
Well,
families are responsible for this stuff. They gave them the leases.
Judge Watanabe, she did hold them accountable in that, like, they could be held responsible for liability along with their tenant. That came up maybe last year when, maybe not for the first lease, but the second lease, they are informed now so that they know about the liability. But, yes, leaser responsibility and landowner responsibility is a very big piece.
Yeah.
And
well, we need to think about how to offer alternative opportunities for using that land. It's not just enough to say they should stop growing GMO crops and testing pesticides, although that's our primary objective. But from the standpoint of the landowner, I mean, if you want to put yourself in their shoes, they still want to lease the land to somebody who's going to use it productively and pay the rent. And in order to do that, I think what we need to do is to develop some kind of agricultural cooperative on this island that would be able to employ workers and develop plantation programs that would plant crops on those lands that would produce valuable products that would enhance the economy without using the kinds of pesticides that are being used. So we need to think both of a negative strategy in terms of approaching the landowners and saying, don't poison us anymore. But in order for them to be able to say yes to that, we also have to be something more creative and positive in approaching them with an alternative way to use the land that will generate income.
And I just want to, I've had a couple shows on it, but I'm excited that we are in some conversation on the west side for another crop called Kanaf. And that would be done in a permaculture style type of agriculture. We're still in the process of creating that. So thank you, caller, for your mana'o. And I got another caller waiting, and then I have Jazz with John is going to be coming up in 15 minutes. And John is an amazing guy with the Lions Club, and I want to allow him to also share what they've got coming up to help the community. So thank you, caller.
Oh, hi, Felicia.
Oh, okay, I got my next caller on. Hi.
Hi. Yes, this is Bridget Hammerquist.
Hey, Bridget.
I just thank you for your show, and I wanted to kind of chime in because I know the results of that last testing that was done by the Department of Health,
okay,
the dairy farm, and Surfrider.
Can you turn your radio off, Bridget?
Sure.
And then bring your voice up.
Okay. And
better.
The test did show, for that one caller that wanted to know, he said he kind of looked for it. I think actually it is posted on the Department of Health website now, but it did show really high numbers. One reading was 17,000. I believe one was 23,000 in some bacteria colony per 100 milliliters. So very definitely the pollution issue is real in Mahalo Valley. As far as the other crops, I also wanted to share with your listeners that in 2009, Grove Farm reached out to the Hyatt and a number of farmers in the area and agriculture people, and they did collectively all praise and welcome a Grove Farm idea at that time, which was to have a collective farm down there of sweet potatoes, taro, orchids. There were a number of different crops discussed that would go well with the clay soil, and the community really welcomed it and looked forward to it. They didn't know then, and they didn't know until really January of this past year about this proposed dairy. So that really is a concern, and the air is going to be an issue. The effluent that they're going to collect, 10% of the waste that falls, they're going to collect in ponds. They're planning to spray through these big pivots. So it is going to be airborne bacteria, and actually there will be manure solids and urine in the water that will be liquefied and sprayed out over the pastures, and they're planning to keep all that, try to keep the waste on the farm, but from what we've been able to determine, it's already, they have a problem with runoff. The Waiopili goes through the farm site, and it's pretty well contaminated just from the grubbing and grading that's been going on. And so it's not a great place, and we have talked the question about, have you talked to the landowner directly? I did want to say that I have copies of letters that were written directly to Steve Case. So it isn't like nobody is talking to the owners. They are, unfortunately, as of the present time, they're not really listening. Yeah, go ahead.
Do you know if the grading and grubbing law is coming up tomorrow at the county council? We're going to hear the county council report in a moment. I'm pulling up really quick what the agenda is for tomorrow. I think grading and grubbing might be, in fact, up for discussion tomorrow. And so I'm double-checking, and I encourage the listener to listen to that. On the county council report, our same John Gordon, he does a very good job at making sure everybody has access to that. The grading and grubbing issue is really quite a critical discussion.
It is. It's particularly so because it gives people an exemption to a permit process. So there's a lot of details when you secure a permit. There are a lot of detailed information you have to give. When you get an exemption to the permit, you have to just persuade West Kauai or East Kauai Soil and Water Conservation District that what you're doing will not likely be harmful. Unfortunately, when they come in with a project that is bigger and more massive than anything this island has had, the people reviewing the project don't really have the experience base or the skill sets to know, you know, and they're not engineers. They're not people that even are at the county level of expertise. So it is an interesting, and they get that exemption for a year. Their grubbing and grading permit that they gave to Hawaii Dairy Farms March 17th of last year goes through March 17th of this year.
Okay, and I'm looking, and I'm actually not seeing grading and grubbing coming up tomorrow. I do see body cams coming up. Okay, Bridget, thank you so much for what you're sharing. Okay, Bob?
Where are these high counts? You said 17,000 and 21,000 counts for the bacteria. Where are those being measured?
They're being measured through water samples taken from the Waiopili stream.
So it's stream samples. It's not after it discharges into the ocean.
No, it's stream samples, and then there is a reading that is ocean, that was taken below the Gillen House from the actual ocean water, and that was at 4,000.
Right, which is about the worst on the island.
Right, it is. And it is because the stream flows right in there.
And for the listeners, other listeners, to put this into perspective, the permissible level is 100, isn't that right?
100 for a single draw, 100 bacteria colony per 100 milliliters. And it's 104 per single draw is the highest that they want to tolerate. And generally, over multiple draws, they want to see it at 35 colonies per 100 milliliters.
Right. But this is way off the charts.
It is way off the charts.
And is there any understanding, since this is relatively undisturbed land, we heard from Billy before that this is pretty well-preserved land, where is this coming from?
Well, there are a number of suggestions that have been offered. There are a small number of cattle in the valley now, and there have been for quite a few years since sugar ended in 1996. There have been anywhere from 50 up to, I think, as much as 150 head of cattle, not much more than that. There are feral pigs in there. There are ducks. There are chickens. But I think Dr. Berg's position and Surfrider's position is that if the natural habitat, if it's the feral animals, if it's the few cows that are there, what it's showing us over and over again for the last 9 months of testing, that's what we're up to now, is that the valley can't tolerate more livestock. It's shaped in a way that drains to the ocean. It's all downslope. It's clay-like soil primarily, so the organic matter doesn't perk in as well as it does in other parts of the island. And the ground can't handle and process the waste like it's supposed to. I know the people at the water department said generally if waste goes through at least 4 feet of soil, it's believed that that will take care of a lot of the bacteria and allow it to be processed. But in this case, we don't have 4 feet of soil at all. And I know that when the Hawaii Dairy Farms people hired the soils experts that they did from Iowa, those people found that, you know, the perkability of the land is it starts to run after 0.2 of an inch of rain. in much of the farm site. And so that means there's no real permeability happening.
Right.
Or the water doesn't sink into the soil, so this nutrients won't go down into the ground. They run off because it's clay.
Right. And there's two rivers coming across the top of the dairy site.
Right. So what we should be asking for, in addition to not putting more livestock on there, is a solution to the existing problem, because that's not tolerable. And if we start asking for people to investigate solutions to the levels that are already showing up, that inevitably gets you to the point of reducing rather than adding
right.
livestock.
Right. So, right. Bridget, thank you
great.
So
I was just
much.
Share, Felicia, too, that the one thing we've really tried to ask for, and I know Surfrider has pushed hard for, is to get a posting in the stream there where the stream bed does come into the ocean. Because sometimes, I know when the environmentalist from Oahu, Carol Cox, was here and took photographs, I mean, it actually was foamy and, you know, really looked bad the day he was there. Some days it's deceptive. It doesn't look so bad. And people take their young children there to play in the mouth of that stream and where it comes into the ocean, because there's kind of a natural sandy, wonderful, not too deep area, you know, kind of the water's even warm there, and the kids love it, and you'll see them. I went riding with a friend horseback about 2 weeks ago, and there must have been a dozen kids playing right at that site.
Right, and I will say that I've been in the hospital with a couple of different friends who have had serious infections, not from that particular stream, but we have some very, very intensive bacteria coming around, and people are really having a hard time. Bridget, I have another person in here who is waiting to speak.
Oh, sure. Go ahead. Thank you, Felicia, very much.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye. So, John, aloha.
Aloha, Felicia. We've got a fun thing coming up this weekend. It's the North Shore Lions annual golf tournament, and it's going to be Saturday at the Mackay Golf Course. And for those of you that haven't registered yet, you can start at 6:30 in the morning, and the golf tournament will start with a shotgun start at 8 o'clock. It's a four-golfer scramble, and there's team awards and a lot of fun things going on. There's closest to the pin contest, driving contest, and one of the new things this year is a helicopter ball drop. What you do, you buy so many balls for such and such a dollar, and then you get half the pot if your ball gets closest to the pin from the helicopter drop. So
the balls are numbered?
Yes, they're numbered and identified.
So
and
if non-golfers want to come and participate, is there a luncheon? This is actually a fundraiser, right?
Yeah, there is. This is a fundraiser. Primarily for scholarships for North Shore students, and we spend the Lions spend thousands of dollars every year, and it's just so rewarding to see these wonderful kids, and they come back and thank us, and you know, we take them all the way often through college, and sometimes the same students get awarded year after year, and it's just really amazing, because you hear so much bad stuff about kids, and these kids are all awesome, and they're really, really good students. There are also awards and drawings for prizes, and there is going to be a lunch, and if you wanted to sign up for the lunch, you can do that, too.
So is there a website people can go to?
Yes. It's the www.KauaiNorthShoreLions.org, and click on Golf Tournament. And you can, if you want to sign online, you can print and mail a form to the Lions. That's at P.O. Box 985 Honolulu 96714. Or you can do it by calling, and the number is 645-1229 or 651-9790. And they will be selling, offering membership or, you know, chances to play in the tournament. The Lions are going to be at the Mackay course in the afternoons, and they're going to be there, I think, from about 11 to 2. And you can also sign up with the pro shop at the Mackay Golf Course,
which is in Princeville. The Mackay Golf Course is in Princeville, not far from our radio station.
Yeah, right across the way. And it's always a fun event. And, again, it's a chance to have fun and support a very, very good, worthy cause.
And I want to thank the Lions for helping so many different issues, especially people struggling. But there's so many ways. The Lions Club, and there's four Lions on the island. Is that right?
I think so, yeah. The North Shore Lions
are the ones that are on the North Shore.
Sure, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, but we're talking to the whole island, so people all over the island benefit from the efforts of all the different Lions clubs. And I'm going to give a shout-out right now to the Rotary, too. They do a lot of really great things, and a lot of times, at least on the North Shore, the Lions and the Rotary work together. And it is really a part of the solution community. And you guys are always, you know, keeping this side of the island strong and healthy, and I appreciate that.
And one thing we've had the last several years is a Weinberg grant, and what that is, the club does a project in the community to help the poor and needy, and then we get a $10,000 grant that we can give to any designee that responds to the needs of the poor and needy. In the last several years, we've given it to the food banks, the one in
Hanalei, Church of the Pacific.
And the one at Church of the Pacific. And speaking of Church of the Pacific, the after-game lunch will be at the Church of the Pacific. And
at what time?
Some of our Lions are cooking a really, really good meal, and it's going to start about 11 o'clock, right after the golf tournament.
This Saturday.
This Saturday. And, again, you can... I'll be there at 6:30. You can come in and register if you're an early bird, or you can do it this week by calling those numbers, or you can do it at the pro shop there, and also there will be Lions there. So it's, we really need and appreciate the support. So it's a very, very good event, and it happens every year.
Well, thank you, and thanks to all the Lions and all the people across the island and the islands, and I'm looking at who all's listening around out in the world, everybody who puts an effort out to make a difference for the people. There are many people who do that. So thank you, John. Jazz with John is coming up next. Marshall, a very quick statement. You guys got to be really quick because then I got the county council report and then we're out of here. And so we're going to have a quick aloha, too.
Well, I just wanted to thank you, Bob. And I want to say about HAPA, you know, to me it's a great illustration of how the forums in the county council campaigns in the election cycle there just fall short of letting you get to know a candidate. You have to talk to him for more than a few minutes to have some sense of it, even that he's...
You get 2% of what he is, and he can speak these different languages. He has such a huge experience in life that it's hard to imagine any one person could have had it. But... I think he's telling the truth, you know? I mean, it's really, really backing that up.
I have nothing against the Kauai Police Force, but I just want to say congratulations to the people that stepped up and did the Kauai Art Night first Saturday in Kapaa, because it was told that it was canceled, and it's pretty much the police force that said it wasn't going to be allowed anymore because they weren't given the money to walk around.